Chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We ferret out the current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and of course, we even cook some of those important recipes. That's Stirring It Up next, but first, the news.
I'm Windsor Johnston. A jetliner crashed upon landing at San Francisco Airport this afternoon. The Federal Aviation Administration says the flight was en route from Seoul, South Korea. NPR's Richard Gonzalez is at the airport where an investigation into the crash is continuing.
San Francisco International Airport is officially closed right now. It's difficult to arrive and to depart. However, there are a lot of people inside the airport who are in transit, who are waiting for another flight. Many of them are in bars, cafes, and restaurants. And there's a very unusual scene in which people are eating and resting while they're watching news footage of the crash that just happened just a few hours ago. It's actually very unnerving.
NPR's Richard Gonzalez. San Francisco General Hospital has confirmed that 10 people are being treated and are listed in critical condition. In Egypt, the interim president has backtracked on an earlier report that Nobel laureate Mohamed El-Baradei would be appointed prime minister. The president's office says no one has been chosen for the position. Earlier state media and Baradei's spokesman had also reported he had been declared prime minister. The Syrian army has advanced into rebel-held areas of the central city of Homs, NPR's Rima Marouche reports.
Residents say the army used artillery fire and rockets to bomb the areas from a distance. That tactic is typical of the Syrian military. Activists say ground troops have not yet stormed the rebel-controlled neighborhoods, but the army did manage to advance in several positions. Fire broke out in at least one besieged neighborhood because of shelling. There are no clear numbers of casualties yet, but one activist said there are 50 wounded and 9 killed in the rebel stronghold of Khaldiyi, where the main army focus is right now. He said the rebel areas are surrounded by the Syrian army and there is no way to get the wounded out. The United Nations says there are approximately 2,500 civilians trapped in Homs. Rima Marouche, NPR News, Beirut.
Suspected Islamist militants attacked a school in northeastern Nigeria today, killing at least 28 children and one teacher. The BBC's Will Ross reports.
Students at the boarding school near Potiskum town were asleep when the gunmen attacked. They doused the buildings with petrol. Some of the students were trapped in the blaze. Others were shot dead as they tried to flee. At the nearby hospital, distraught parents struggled to identify their children. Many of the bodies were burnt beyond recognition. The attack is likely to have been carried out by the Islamist militant group known as Boko Haram, whose name means Western education is forbidden. It wants to establish an Islamic state in Nigeria and has targeted many schools before.
The BBC's Will Ross reporting from Lagos. This is NPR News in Washington. In Florida, jurors in the George Zimmerman trial over the death of Trayvon Martin are spending the weekend with a lot to think about, including conflicting testimony. Yesterday's court session saw the prosecution rest its case and the judge's rejection of a defense request to acquit Zimmerman of second-degree murder. Asylum offers from the former NSA contractor turned fugitive are coming in from South America. NPR's Dan Bobkoff reports at least three countries and now say they would welcome Edward Snowden.
The governments of Venezuela, Nicaragua, and now Bolivia say Snowden could come to their countries. Snowden is thought to be holed up at the Moscow airport since arriving there nearly 2 weeks ago, and he's been filing for asylum around the world. Bolivia's offer comes days after its president's plane was refused access to parts of European airspace after Snowden was wrongly thought to be on board. If Snowden does pursue any of the offers from the South American nations, it's unclear how he would get there. The U.S. stripped him of his passport. Snowden is wanted in the U.S. after he revealed classified information about the country's domestic and foreign spying programs. Dan Bobkoff, NPR News.
A solar-powered aircraft is on its way to New York on its final leg of a cross-country trip. The Solar Impulse took off from Dulles International Airport outside Washington early this morning. It's expected to land at JFK tomorrow around 2 a.m. local time. The aircraft is powered by some 11,000 solar cells and moves along at a top speed of 45 miles per hour. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
For the finest in classic ska, rocksteady, rockers, DJ, dancehall, and dub, it's Jamon. Cecil here, bringing you Southwest Louisiana's longest-running reggae tradition, Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m., or Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m., and streaming live anytime at krvs.org.
Chef John Fulce welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And it's so nice to have each and every one of you here around the kitchen table today after that big July 4th weekend. It's, I should say weekend. I always call it weekend, you know, July 4th week. Anyway, y'all, I'd like to begin by introducing our executive producer, Michelle Yark, who's on the phone right now, probably making plans for tonight. Slum, you see how she's just being studious over there typing in something? You know what that's
about.
I'm
not typing anything. I'm reading.
Oh, yeah. Well, but we're in a show right now. We're kicking off the big show right now.
How many times do you see him check his cell phone during the middle of the show?
But I'm the boss. Or,
stay
but
busy.
But that doesn't make it right.
But I can multitask.
Yeah, I've seen you multitask.
Anyway, what's going on over there? How's your big 4th of July?
Fantastic. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, what you do like that?
Just hung out.
You just hung out.
Red.
Huh? Yeah, red.
Well, Slum. You know, I got a lot of work.
Wearing red.
Yeah, wearing red. Yeah. Anyway, Slama, what about you? What do you do on the big 4th?
You know, we do fireworks. So we went and caught some fireworks out there on the river, and it was pretty good.
I worked. You know, my public came to have dinner, and I mean, I enjoy my public. You know what I mean? I enjoy.
So you didn't do the hot dog eating contest?
No, I was told y'all I was going to try to do something different this time, but I didn't. Can you imagine that I just worked?
Yes, I can.
Got to please all the people all the time.
You know what's coming up?
Yep, right around the corner.
That's right.
Right around the corner.
Slama, you probably don't know this since.
What's going on?
This is kind of your first summer here.
Yeah.
It is your first summer in Fallstown. This is my birthday month. On July 9th, it's kind of like July 4th all over again. Because it's my birthday, July 9th. Yeah. And I'm perfectly suited to be a Cancer. You know, managerial mind, crabby every now and then, a natural born leader, great chef and cook. I mean, that's all part of being Cancer. It's all right, isn't it? Interesting how things work out like that.
Does some things backwards and I have to straighten it out.
Anyway, no, it is. And Slama, I have to tell you, two things happen here during July. It is my birthday month. I celebrate for the whole month because, you know, and gifts start to come in. Michelle, did you get anything in the mail yet?
Working on it.
You're working on it. See that? 3 days and she's working on it. Anyway, it's my birthday.
What is your size, by the way, in case you want to tell
I am not giving out size. People who know me well enough to buy me something to wear know my size.
They know. You have to ask.
Yep.
He likes for us to post them every now and then.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting ready to say. I post my sizes on the coffee room wall, and I post the top 10 things I'm interested in.
So if you have any idea, Salami, if you, since it's your first year, just go to the coffee room over there. You can find out anything I need. People
take the guessing
and,
out of it.
And just because somebody checked off, like my first gift that I'm looking for, my second gift, don't say, well, I'm not going to give that gift, because some people spend less on a gift than others. So just because I'm asking for a certain thing doesn't mean that I'm going to get the best of it. Well, it might get me one, like
so
a cheaper model or something.
You need some things that you can return to make up the difference.
That's what I'm talking about.
Don't be the receipt.
Yeah, so don't be pushed away. Miss Yark,
mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of got a craving right now.
You do?
Yeah.
I did a tart yesterday. You know, I went to the farmer's market, and all these beautiful berries are in. And you know, I make Retifia every year. You know, my liqueurs that I make my infused brandies. And I was looking for less expensive bruised fruit. You know, those that's not the best A-type fruit. Because I'm just making wine and liquors with it. I'm looking for those that might not be the best, but I still want to help the farmer. I want to buy them. And at a fair and equitable price. So anyway, I was looking for blueberries, raspberries, strawberries that were left over at the end of the season. And these big, beautiful blackberries. So raspberries, strawberries, blackberries, to make my Retifias. And they were so beautiful, I decided that I should make a simple wrap tart. You know, I like to make these wrap tarts. I have a great recipe for a pie crust. I can make it in 5 minutes. Or you can go buy one at the store, and then you just lay that flat crust out, and then you just fill it up with berries, put a little brown sugar, a little turbinado sugar on it, just a little flour. I sprinkle a little bit of, you know, maybe a little liqueur or something on top of it, and I fold it over, throw it in the oven.
Sounds good.
And that's perfect. And I got to thinking, you know, pies. I love pies.
You know what I love?
What?
I love rhubarb pie.
I love strawberry rhubarb pie.
I love that. I ate my weight when I was in the Atlantic Maritime provinces.
Oh, you did?
Because rhubarb was in season.
Oh, I see. So of all, you know, I want to mention, Slima, I just want to mention, she went on this trip. We never heard from her. And everything she did, see right now, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, oh, I ate rhubarb pie. She never mentioned rhubarb pie one time.
I love rhubarb. Yeah. I don't think I took a picture of my rhubarb pie.
Of course you did.
I was too busy eating it.
And if you would have, we wouldn't have gotten it. So we didn't get
probably not, because apparently you didn't get one picture.
Yeah, vacation. When I go on vacation, well, no, I don't have to send a picture. When I go on vacation, she's normally there. She's normally there, huh? So you like rhubarb. I like rhubarb pie, but I like strawberry rhubarb pie, because rhubarb tends to be a little astringent, a little, and the strawberries tend to add some good sweet, but I love a strawberry
David
rhubarb
Harris
pie.
David Harris said that the other day, but I have to say, I think I must have had straight rhubarb.
Well, no, you can have a straight rhubarb pie. They just put a lot of sugar on. I mean, it's like persimmons or anything else. You get an astringent persimmon, you cook sugar, and I mean, it comes, it's beautiful. Anyway, I absolutely love pie, and I've been just kind of having a little craving for it, you know?
I would love to have some pie. Kind of the secret's in the crust, huh?
No doubt about it. I got a great crust, too. As far as I'm concerned, it's never not a good time for a pie. You know, I mean, I love them. And goodness knows that in our Revolution restaurant, the reason I got so into pies recently, they come up with some amazing twists on pies. You mentioned the rhubarb. You know, they have fig preserves. They cook some fresh figs that are just coming in right now into rhubarb, and they made a beautiful fig and rhubarb pie. And that's why I did the triple fruit, because they had done a triptych of fruit tarts the other day with all that. And when I saw them, I said, I got to make me a little fold-over, I call it. I call it a fold-over pie. Anyway, you've heard that the proof is in the pudding. You're right. The proof is in the pie crust. And people are so afraid of pie crust. I'm telling you, I have the best and the most foolproof pie crust. 5 minutes, you're done. It's beautiful.
You might find this interesting. You remember when we talked about honey and how it dated back to prehistoric times?
Absolutely. Everything dates back to prehistoric times.
But, you know, the cave drawing of the man gathering the honey with the hive in the tree.
He's holding on to a branch and the bees are killing him, but he's reaching in that hive to get some honey. I remember that picture.
Well, there's a little bit of a toss-up as to which came first, honey or pies.
Is that right?
Yeah, it seems that they may have even developed around the same time, around 9500 BC, with the invention of stone tools that were used for grinding, like grinding oats and wheat and other grains. They would take that, and it was being compressed and used to encase honey.
So they were using grain, like flour and wheat, to make a crust, and it was just a whole honey.
Right.
Not realizing they might be making a honey pie at some point.
Exactly.
I'm with you.
But there's evidence of this early kind of form of pastry in the tomb walls of Pharaoh Ramses.
Oh, yeah, Ramses II.
He was everywhere.
He made the computer. yeah, he invented television, Ramses II, 1200
Ramses,
B.C.
Yeah,
there's even a recipe for chicken pie that was found on a Sumerian tablet.
Chicken pot pie. You see, we think we know something. Ramses II was making pie crust and all that.
Prehistoric comfort food.
I also find it interesting that they were making both sweet and savory pies. You mentioned the chicken pot pies. Mm-hmm. The ancient Greeks used a flour and water paste to encase meat for cooking. They found that a dough wrapping sealed in all of the juices and created a lightweight holder for these long sea journeys that they were on. And as the technique was passed on to the Romans, you know, spices were added. They were all over the world, so they picked up spices and salt and peppers. That was added to the meat inside of these dough casing, these crusts that they were making as a transport item. I think of our delicious Natchitoches meat pies as something similar to that. The only difference is that the crust in this case can be eaten because it's nice and soft as opposed to being something you seal in. But that was the origin of the crust, was a sealed container.
Well, you know, dough wrappings were even found in ancient Roman cookbooks. They were made with cheese and herbs and honey cooked inside the dough base. I don't know, you might say it was kind of an early version of a cheesecake.
Sure, by the 12th century in England, pies that was spelled in Old English writing with the Y instead of the I were becoming very common food items. The first printed apple pie recipe was by the famous author Chaucer in 1381. And going by his list of ingredients, I think I'd have liked that pie as well. It's called for filling of apples and spices. He put figs and dried grapes, which are raisins. That was the first time you see raisins and pears.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah, so he made his pie with all of these different things. Other fillings were more exotic. You remember we talked about the songbirds? So many blackbirds baked in a pie?
Oh, yeah, 4 and 20 blackbirds.
4 and 20 blackbirds. So they had birds that were considered a delicacy at the time were being baked in dough fillings. Medieval cooks would place a cooked bird on top of a pie to identify its contents.
Oh.
And remember the little porcelain birds that you went put in a pie that when they're talking about pie birds, you know, so the steam could shoot out the little bird's mouth in the pie. Anyway, very
interesting. Did that mean it was done?
Yeah, that meant it was done, yeah.
You know, there's even a record of peacock pie being served in 1429 at the coronation of King Henry VI. He was just 8 years old at the time. But birds weren't the only thing that went into pies. Royal guests were often surprised with live animals that would pop out of the pies, like rabbits and frogs and turtles. What would happen is the cooks would cut a hole in the bottom of the dough casing, put the live animal inside as a little surprise when the pie was opened at the table.
Small animals, small people too, Michelle. In fact, in 1600, Geoffrey Hudson, the famous 18-inch dwarf, popped out of a very large pie and bowed to the 15-year-old Queen Henrietta Maria. So, I mean, yeah, even people jumped out of pies right back then, yeah.
By the late 1600s, pies were becoming a staple on the English table, but they were mainly savory meat pies.
Yeah, most of them were meat, yeah.
Shepherd's pie with lamb and vegetables, cottage pie with beef and vegetables, both topped with potatoes. Very popular dishes of the English.
Well, you know, it's interesting to note, too, that the early crusts were known as coffins. Mm-hmm. Coffin, C-O-F-F-Y-N-S. And weren't at all like the flaky part of the pies that we eat today, but were often hard as a rock, inedible, as we talked about, like the original pie crust that we used to hold the honey. Anyway, the Native Americans taught the early settlers how to cook sweet berries into pies, and sugar became available. Things started to improve. And y'all, today, we're going to talk more about pies. One of my favorite subjects. We got two great guests on the show we're going to talk about. So y'all, won't you dare go anywhere. We're going to surprise you with pies, and it ain't no bird jumping out of it alive. See you in a minute.
Shoot like pies. An apple pan, and daddy makes your eyes light up. Your tummy say, holly, shoot like pie. An apple pan, daddy, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoot like little pie, an apple pan, and Daddy makes the sun come out.
Greetings, I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Well, I tell you what, Michelle, that reminds me of that old sock hop at St. James, that song right there, huh? When the girls were lined up to dance with me, huh? Anyway, y'all, welcome back to the big show today, Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And today we're talking about pies. We're talking about those deep dish pies. We're talking about those with the crumpled edges. We're talking about tarts, Michelle, in those fluted little pans, or in galettes with their edges folded over sweet cream and fruit pies. We're talking about tarte à la bouillie. We're talking about my little fold-over pie I made yesterday, just with a triptych
of fruit. Which was delicious.
Didn't you get some?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I'll tell you what, a good cook, Michelle, can in fact be judged by their pie.
Ooh.
Even though they're not a pastry chef like the people we're going to be talking to in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
A good cook can be judged by their pie, you know what I mean?
Good to know.
Well, I tell you what, I have two great pie makers who promised that they were going to be here to share their thoughts with us today. Two great pastry cooks. In fact, I'm going to let you introduce them right now because you got to give them their due diligence, so to speak.
That's right. They're a dynamic dessert duo from Restaurant Revolution. We have Erin Swanson, executive pastry chef.
She's good, Michelle.
I know.
You know who she worked with, huh?
Yeah.
Gail Gann worked with her. Gail Gann worked with her. Huh? Yeah.
Gail Gann did work with her.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm sorry. I need to jump ahead.
And we also have on the show with us today, assistant pastry chef Shalonda Berry. I love that a pastry chef's last name would be Berry. God has a funny way of doing that, you know?
Yeah.
Both chefs come to us by way of Chicago, but we've kind of adopted them as our own.
Well, no, we didn't kind of adopt them.
You know?
We adopted two beautiful girls who ain't going back. They ain't going back, I'm telling you right now. Huh?
Well, they
There's nothing up north for these girls. Nothing up
not
north.
Not when you're down here.
I'll tell you what.
Maybe they want to dance with you later.
I'll dance with both of them.
Erin's background is with exclusive restaurants such as Chicago's Ritz-Carlton, the Aspen Institute, Jack Nicklaus Private Golf Resort, the Bears Club in Jupiter, Florida. Both Erin and Shalonda met when they worked with Chef Rick Tremonto, your partner at Revolution, at his Chicago steak restaurant. Erin spends her days at Revolution cooking up delicious new dessert ideas and new ways with old favorites. And Shalonda puts her degree in pastry arts to work recreating her mom's secret pie recipes.
Ooh.
Now, I have a feeling you're going to twist her arm. She may still have a couple of little secrets up her sleeve. I don't want to say steal them.
Well, I'm not going to say steal them either, but I actually admire, when I say pastry chef, I'm talking about one of the great pastry chefs. Erin is not only a beautiful girl, but also at the same time, an unbelievable chef. I love to watch her work. I watch her at a distance. Sometimes she doesn't know it. Yeah, she doesn't know it, but I watch at a distance because I love when their eyes are, you know, they're looking down at a pie, or they're looking down at a souffle, or they're kind of fooling with fruit. And I think to myself, I wonder what's going on in her mind right now as she's looking at. And then, of course, I'll walk back there, and Shalanda's doing her thing as assistant pastry chef in the back. She's a beautiful girl as well. And she's sitting in the back, and she's making her little things. And I walk back there. I say, babe, what y'all got today?
Mm-hmm.
I said, babe, what y'all
you
got
probably
today?
Throw their counts off every day.
I probably throw their counts off in a big way.
Every
I said,
day.
And I have a sweet tooth. I have a sweet tooth. You might not know that.
No, I don't know that. I've never noticed.
Anyway, girls, welcome so much. We appreciate y'all being with us on Stirring It Up today. Thank y'all. And I know y'all busy over there at Revolution. So thanks for being with us. How y'all doing?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Y'all doing all right over there?
Yeah, things are going great.
So, Aaron, let's chat with you first, because I know that y'all a team over there, and you have a great pastry team that works around y'all. And as executive pastry chef, I mean, how did you make a decision to say, well, okay, I'm going to take pastry over savory? Was that a decision you made along the way, or did you study both arts and decide to go to pastry, or was it always in your blood?
When I first started culinary school, I did want to do just pastry. And then I took some pastry classes and found out I wasn't that great at it from the beginning, because I was just kind of wanting to have everything right the first time I made it. And then over the years, I've kind of done both savory and doing a little pastry here and there. And about 12, 13 years ago, I decided to just stick with pastry. And I've been doing it ever since.
Now, as executive pastry chef, when we talk about executive pastry chef, you have a great assistant executive and you have a great team around you. What is your exact role as executive pastry chef?
As the executive pastry chef, I'm not only in charge of creating the menu and the different desserts and also making some of the day-to-day things, I also do the ordering for specialty items that we need. I hire my staff. And I'm kind of like the liaison between the chef and the restaurant with my staff, letting them know the day-to-day things, how busy we are, are there any special parties going on, and just create menu items.
You know, every time I'm there, Aaron, you have such a variety of desserts to choose from that it's really pretty tough to choose. I mean, I'm a sucker for white chocolate. That little beignet and mocha pot au creme. Gosh, how do you ever determine what desserts you're going to feature on the menu?
Well, being down here in New Orleans, there's a lot of desserts that are very iconic to the area. I kind of like take a different spin on it, make it a little more modern, a little more less traditional, but trying to keep the same idea behind the dessert. And I create the dish, and then I let the chef taste it, see what they think. And the next step is actually putting it on the menu.
Now, you know, at this year's New Orleans Food and Wine Experience, you got a gold medal for the white chocolate bread pudding creme brulee. And you took a basic white chocolate bread pudding recipe, which is a pretty doggone good recipe, but you made it a great recipe and created the creme brulee aspect to it. And that was quite an honor. What was that judging all about? I mean, what separated you from the other folks when you took that medal?
I believe they were looking for different ideas behind the New Orleans dessert and everything. And because everybody makes bread pudding and it's so good, it's just trying to do something different. And that's why I tried to come up with the idea of actually having a layer of custard on the top and torching it with sugar. And then the full dish, you know, there's some apricots on the dish to kind of emulate their raisins, but not being so overly sweet. And then a great salted bourbon caramel sauce to tie it all together.
Well, I just want to go on the record and say I had given this dish a gold medal long before Nalfi discovered it. I just want everybody to know that. That is a fantastic
dish.
Well, that,
it is a great dish. And you took a great dish and made it a great addition. That's really the secret of a great cook, is to look at something that everybody would say, there's nothing you can do with this. It's the best it's going to be. And then you look at it and say, you know what? I can make it better. And that's exactly what you did. You took something that was good and you made it great. And that's really the sign of a superior cook. And Shalanda, your pies are to die for. And look, pies, we kid about them all the time, but pies are not easy. I mean, we would like to think that they're simple. Oh, I got a great pie crust. Oh, my God, you know, we can, it's just a matter of cooking a little fruit. It's not, well, you know, it's really not. Pies can be the devil in the details, so to speak. Who was your mentor in pie making? Because you really make great pies.
Well, thank you, Chef. Honestly, I just try to do what my mom did. She's my mentor. I mean, I grew up with pie, so trying to do what she did. But she didn't measure anything, so it's just going after her and trying to make it the way she did. So that's all I'm trying to do.
Now, you say you love to make pies. You follow your mother's recipe. Again, I taste pies all the time, and I think I make a good pie, too. But there's something about a pie when you know it is exceptionally good. I mean, you taste it, you just see it in the pie pan, and you look at it and you say, you know, that's a really, really great pie. You say you learned from your mother by watching her. What made her pies great, in your opinion, now that you are a seasoned pie maker?
The crust. I think that's the most important part. I mean, I think a good filling could be lost on a bad crust. So her crust was always really good and flaky and just the right amount of sugar and a little bit of salt. And, you know, those are the things that I think make a good pie a better pie. And she always used things that were, you know, in season. So, you know, when peaches were good, we ate a lot of peach pie. And so, you know, that's the way she did it.
Now, Erin, is that the most difficult part you think of a pie? I think what Yolanda said is probably a fact, but what do you find as an executive pastry chef trying to teach other chefs? What do you find about a crust that makes it difficult when I kind of think of a crust as being pretty simple?
I think a lot of times people tend to overthink the crust in itself, and it's, for me, like, the good key is to have all of your items that you're using, the ingredients, really, really cold. And I think the easiest way to actually make it is to use a food processor to make sure you get the shortening or the butter or lard even really small, be cut into the flour and other ingredients. That way, when it bakes, you have nice little flaky holes in the crust and everything. And that's a really good key to a good crust.
Absolutely right. I mean, and y'all put out some pretty spectacular. Even when you took our tarte la bouillie, I thought you did such an unbelievable job, Erin, when I gave you this old recipe from Cajun country, Louisiana, the tarte la bouillie, the boiled custard tart. And I think you kind of looked at this thing and said, are you kidding me? But then, once again, you took this simple recipe and turned it into just a beautiful presentation, simply done, presented on a plate in a unique and interesting way with other elements added to it that really sent it into the stratosphere with beauty and also great look, great eye appeal. Is that something that's one of your forte, is being able to, just like you did the bread pudding, you turn it into the white chocolate bread pudding creme brulee? Is that your forte, to look at something and say to yourself, how can I send it to the next level? How can I make it my own by doing something very special?
Well, I think of the, you know, the main part of the dessert that I want to feature, and then I want to think of, you know, what will elevate it. The tarte à la bouillie especially is something that, you know, many people saw at home and only at home. So I think, you know, how can I make this in a restaurant? How can I make it approachable to have somebody want to try it, because it's either, if they're not from here, have never heard of it, and or if they're from here and they're, I'm sure their grandmother makes it better than anyone else. So what else can I add to it to make it even more interesting? And with that particular one, I was thinking of a strawberry shortcake, because it's, you know, vanilla flavored, and it was just in strawberry season. So I started playing with different textures and things with strawberry, and putting on some strawberry gelée and a strawberry white balsamic gastrique and just some crunch factor with some vanilla meringue and everything.
I'm sold. You know, do you have a little sample team on there? And I volunteer. And Yolanda, I don't know, you do the sweet pies, but do you do savory as well?
Not here at the Revolution, I have not. But, yeah, at home I do, like, quiches and, you know, cheese pies, those kind of things.
Aaron, what was it that had you create the deconstructed pie? When you did the deconstructed banana cream pie, it became a gigantic hit in the restaurant. What was the reason for thinking about deconstructing a pie? And tell us what it is.
Well, for me, I kind of always have a little joke as far as pie on a plate. I come from a fine dining background and everything, and to have just a piece on a pie on a plate is kind of very plain and simple. And when we were going through the opening menu of the restaurant here, Chef Tremonto said, "Okay, Aaron, I give you a week. I want a pie on the menu." And I laughed at him, and I was like, "Are you serious?" And he said, "Yep, we're in the South. Give me a pie." So that was my challenge, to create a pie, but make it different, like nobody's ever seen, and not be just a piece of pie on the plate. So I took all of the components of banana cream pie and put it on the plate in a very kind of separate way, but once you eat it all together, you actually get the flavor of banana cream pie.
Now, you know, working in the industry as long as you have, I know you've seen a lot of trends. You've worked with the great chef, Gail Gann, both of you. And I mean, you've seen, I mean, she's one of the premier chefs, one of the best known pastry chefs in the country. And I know y'all have seen a lot of trends and fads come and go. Anything that you can think of in past dessert trends or whatever that comes to mind, or any current dessert trend that you're seeing right now in restaurants?
Past dessert, there's always... The cupcake has always been huge. The French macaroon has come around full circle. There's now something crazy that we hear over in New York. It's called the cronut, which is a croissant and a donut in one. Kind of things as far as in the restaurants, I work a lot with some herbs and maybe savory, like black pepper and pink peppercorns, or, you know, using tarragon and just different kinds of herbs that you normally wouldn't associate with dessert. A lot of organic plating, so things are not so constructed and not so have tall, tall garnishes on them. It's more kind of like natural.
Well, you know, I walked into the restaurant the other day, and you had a little tiny mason jar, and you had a nice little gelée on the top, and I looked at it, and I said, that's how simple it was, and I took a spoon, and I tasted it. And I'm going to tell you, simplicity in this form became the best dessert I think I ever tasted. Tell us a little bit about that dessert that is now on the menu that y'all created that is just so phenomenal.
It's a lemon panna cotta with a sweet tea gelée.
Sweet
perfect
tea.
For the summer. Very light. I have the southern idea of sweet tea and the lemon light flavor. And then since peaches are in season, we do some grilled peach relish with some ginger. And then we actually had the grilled peaches on the board, and we put it on a wooden board with, like, a little picnic cloth. So it's just very summery and really light.
Well, Michelle, what else is there to say?
Oh, my gosh. I got a long way to go in pastry. That's what... It's so beautiful and such an art form, and I think a lot of times we miss that. You know, it's important to save room for dessert at the end of the meal, because if you miss it, you certainly have missed the artistry of these pastry chefs. That's just incredible.
Well, you know, we always say, as chefs and executive chefs, we always say that pastry chefs have the toughest time, because we feed them all these appetizers, these soups, these salads, these entrees. We try to pile on triple entrees, and now for dessert, and people say, I'm too full for dessert. And we think to ourselves, these pastry chefs have created these masterpieces, and in no way do you not have room for dessert. And at Revolution, I can say that Aaron has put together a spectacular pastry team. We've got a lot of young folks coming up in the industry as well. And I just wanted to say thank y'all, both of you, for a job extremely, extremely well done. The creativity that y'all bring to the table, and the harmony of that, you, Aaron, as executive pastry chef, and Shalonda working as executive sous and pastry. The teamwork that y'all display is phenomenal. I'm just so happy to have y'all on our team over there. And I don't know what Revolution would do without you, because you are such an important part. It's the last thing our guest sees. is, and it's the first thing they're going to talk about as they walk out onto the street is the dessert that they've just had at the restaurant. So thank y'all so much for doing the work that you do, and thank y'all for being with us today. As busy as you are, I know y'all have to get back to the table, so thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Sean.
Okay, and hey, look, I'm going to be there after a while. How about heating up a piece of pie for me?
Anytime,
Jeff. All right, y'all. Aaron and Jalon, the pastry chefs at Revolution Restaurant in New Orleans, the corner of Bourbon and Bienville. You know where they are. Go over and see them. We're going to be back in just a minute.
Come on, children. 1, 2, 3. Together. Come on, follow me. If I want a sweet pie, I want a bowl of soup, a piece of pie. Yes, yes.
In Ghana in the early 1970s, funk music came home to Africa, fusing with high life to create a whole new genre. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. And join me for Ebo Taylor and the Pioneers of Afrofunk in Ghana. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Claudine Langille is known for her work with Touchstone and Gypsy Reel. We met at the Swan and Oar Gathering in the mountains of North Carolina to chat about why songs and tunes from the Canadian Maritimes, Ireland and Appalachia flow through her music, and she shares some of it with us. A visit with Claudine Langille this week on The Thistle and Shamrock. Join us.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Comics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we've got the one, the only, Louisiana favorite, Tab Benoit, on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise. It's so good, we're going to spend the entire show with him. That, plus our feature host Barbara Ching, will continue her look at country music and the blues. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Saturday night at 11, here on KRVS.
T'as des misères à réveiller les dimanches matins? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud, tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h. On va charrer en français, écouter la musique en français et boire une petite tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Walking on cloud nine today. I'm over that line today. Happiness is finally mine today. I guess I'm just a lucky guy. And here I'm about to tell you why. Strictly on account of my sweet potato pie.
All right, y'all. Sweet potato pie, one of my favorite, too. I just love Michelle. Those two girls are great, huh?
Oh, they're fantastic. Oh. Are you kidding? You know, and I know that they have to do it for fine dining, so it's a little more artistic, but there's nothing I'd like more than to get just a slice of pie on a plate, especially one of Shalonda's mom's. inspired pies.
Well, and that's the great thing about Yolanda and Aaron. I mean, Aaron is executive pastry chef. He's always concentrating on the plate design, how beautiful it is, because she's such so fabulous at what she does.
Yes.
Yolanda's coming from an African-American background, and her family is such good pie makers. In simplicity, even though she's spectacular at her plate designs and everything else. Well, look, when you tell her to make a pie, she lights up. And Aaron and I were having a conversation one day, and she said, you know, I never made a lot of pies. You know, in my part of the world, pies weren't a big thing we did. We looked to the South for pies.
Oh.
And we think of that as a Southern thing, and we think of it as more of a casual thing. We're more about those fancy tarts and all of that up north. And I thought about that for a minute, and I said, well, that makes perfect sense. And Yolanda said, well, my family were great pie makers. Mm-hmm. And one day she made a pie, and she made an apple pie that was the most delicious thing I think I had ever tasted. I said, I want that pie on a plate.
Yeah.
So we do three pies a day now at the restaurant. That's just absolutely spectacular. So anyway, Slama, what about our Facebook page? What's going on Facebook?
Yeah, facebook.com/stirringitupradio. And that stirring doesn't have a G in it. That is the public forum for this radio show. That's where we have the discussions. That's where we take the input from our stove hounds. And right now, we're trying to get a recipe for our first smoke in that smokehouse.
Yeah, we're trying to fire up Old Smokey. I'm not firing up Old Smokey until we have the winner who's going to give us the best recipe. Because this smokehouse, as I tell everybody, you know, it was built probably 100 years ago, and it fell apart, and I loaded it up on the back of a truck and moved it off of Cabanossi Plantation in St. James to Baton Rouge. It sat there for 5 years at White Oak, kind of falling apart. And one day I said, you know, if I don't do something with this thing, I'm going to lose part of history.
Mm-hmm.
It is beautiful. In fact, as you can see pictures of it, if you go to our website, jfalls.com, and go to White Oak Farm, you can see the picture of the reconstruction of Old Smokey. And now we're waiting to fire it up. It's going to be beautiful.
Trying to make somebody famous.
But I want to make somebody famous to say they are the first one to cook their recipe. This is the first time we fired up this smokehouse in 100 years, and it was their recipe we used, and they're going to be there, and it's going to be part of the radio show. So we want our stovehouse to compete. There's a lot of great people who smoke briskets and smoke pork shoulders and whole hog and all ribs. I mean, hey, you want to be the one to go down in history. We're going to put a little plaque on it that says, whoever it is, smoke the first thing in this smokehouse.
Make history, yeah.
Yeah, make a little bit of history. You want to be a part of that, I know, especially all of you out there who have great recipes and think you can compete. We're going to be the judge here, right? What else going on?
So we're having a discussion on Facebook, like I said, and sometimes we get comments. And, you know, the 4th of July just came by, and we got Miss Rhonda Elizabeth. She says, I saw the article in The Advocate regarding your company bringing food to the troops in Afghanistan. I was very touched and wanted to personally thank you. And she said her son is currently deployed there, and she says, God bless.
Well, you know, it was a great gift for us to be able to do that, and that was headed up by my good friend Charles Carroll, Chef Charles Carroll from River Oaks Country Club in Houston, who a few years ago came to me, and we kind of put the idea together of doing something. He headed it up and created Operation Hot, honoring our troops. So we did 5,000 troops a couple of years ago. This year we did food for 7,000 troops, flew it to Kuwait. We cooked it all in Donaldsonville, right here in the cane fields of South Louisiana, shipped all of that food to Kuwait, and then on military aircraft we sent it over to Kandahar base in Afghanistan, and just last week fed all of those troops a wonderful meal from the swamplands of Louisiana, our little taste of Louisiana. And the emails have been phenomenal. People are just so appreciative, whereas we should be the one really appreciative of the great work they're doing away from their families, away from their children. I got one of the most moving and tearful emails that I could have gotten. A major sent us an email about a little cross that we had put in there, created by, the story, Michelle.
Right, St. Mary's. Up in around Alexandria, Pineville area, it's a school for autistic children. And what we did was have them decorate these small pocket crosses, 5,000 ceramic crosses for their pockets. And they decorated them beautifully. And this major wrote a note and said, you know, I didn't think anything could get better. You know, the meal was fantastic. And we got all these gift bags with caps and sunglasses and just all this stuff. And then there was a small little bag.
Oh, wow.
And when I opened it, it had a cross in it. And he said,
oh, goodness.
That struck me. But then when I read the story, it really hit home because my son is autistic.
11-year-old, it was his birthday that day. 11-year-old child's birthday that day when he opened the bag.
Isn't that awesome? And he said it just made me think of my little guy back home.
Yeah.
And so nice to know, you know, that this school is doing so much for autistic children and for research in autism.
And you know, he's coming to Louisiana. And
he's When's he coming?
Coming out. Well, I invited him to come. His email was so moving. It said, brought tears to his eyes, brought tears to our eyes to read it. And he was so moved by this. And I invited him to come and be our guest. And we'd put him and his family up and bring his little boy in to tour St. Mary's. And he wrote back and said, I'm in. I'm in. I said, well, just let us know. Let us know whenever you're back. I said, and we're going to treat you to a wonderful weekend in Louisiana. He's not from Louisiana, of course. So anyway, yeah, that's the kind of moving stories we get from doing these kind of things.
We have that going on Facebook. And I also wanted to mention that if you wanted to listen to the show after the broadcast, we had a podcast on jfolse.com. And just click on the little radio show button there, and it'll help you out and find the stream, the free download of this broadcast. And we also now have an archive site up where you can download past shows if you missed one or if you just want to go back and catch up with the old memories.
Well, that's another thing, too, because a part of our soldiers group over in Afghanistan, that's one of the things they mentioned, is that the Louisiana guys over there do listen to our radio show. They can go on their computer and listen to it. So anyway, congratulations to all of our soldiers over there listening to the show. Thank you all so much for the great, great job you're doing protecting us, and we're keeping you in our prayers, needless to say. Michelle, what about books on the subject here?
Well, I have two books to share with you.
The first,
Little Black Book of Pies.
Oh, my God, I love
now,
that. Look at this book. Nothing but a black cover with a little white thing.
That's right, and that's it. There are no pictures. It's all about pies. And for somebody who's pie crust challenged, it's a great little book to get started. The author starts off with some rules of thumb, so to speak, and there are some great recipes for pie crusts and toppings. Sweet pies and savory pies in here. You know, just thumbing through it, she's got a baked green tomato pie.
Oh, I love a tomato pie. Never done a green tomato pie, but I love a red basil tomato pie. Oh, my God, I love that.
And she's got raisin pie in here. Is raisin pie what they used to call funeral pie?
Funeral pie, yeah. Funeral pie was raisin pie, yeah. Let me see that book right there. That's very interesting.
Isn't this interesting? And I thought, you know, at the very end, the author, and her name is Deitra Danae Davis, said one of the most endearing food gifts you can give someone is a delicious homemade pie. They're easy to make because a pre-made pie crust is just a grocery store away. Now, with that said, don't feel obligated to always buy your pie crust. There's nothing to compare to a homemade pie crust. And if you don't believe me, just make one of the crusts in this book. Homemade is always better.
That's true.
And there's always room for pie.
You better believe it. And people who are afraid of making pie crust, certainly go to the store and buy a pie crust, because the easier part is the fillings.
Don't let that stop you from making pie.
No, absolutely. You know, I made a cherry pie the other day, Michelle, and I messed it up.
You did?
Yeah, because...
Well, who ate the mess up? Because
I mean, give me a break. There's no such thing.
But not me.
Well, I did it at the station. But anyway, you know what happened? The fruit was so sweet and so full of juice that I didn't have enough starch to hold the juice. So it kind of made it like a soup pie. But you talk about it. Look, so I call it my cherry soup pie. You talk about good. I made a masterpiece. My cherry soup pie. I love it.
That may be one that we'll have to add to the Little Black Book of Pies.
Oh, and the lemon curd tart. And the tartlets are just little pies. So you make it just kind of bite-sized individuals, and nothing's better than lemon curd. I made an orange curd using blood oranges and did a little tart. And I like the little foldovers. I cut up about the foldovers, but just to take a simple pie crust and put it on a pan, just on a flat pan, like a cookie sheet, just get a 9-inch pie crust, and then take any fruit, cook it, just saute it a little bit. You can even use fresh fruit like blueberries and blackberries, which you don't have to cook, but apples you can slice and cook them in a little butter to soften them. And all you need is sugar, a little flour to thicken it up a little bit. You can put a little vanilla in it if you want to. But the flour and the sugar kind of holds the fruit together, and you put it in the middle of that pie crust after it cools a little bit, and just fold it over the edges and paint it with a little heavy whipping cream and drop some sugar around the outside or throw it in the oven. It's kind of like a pie pizza almost, you know what I mean? But it's so great and easy to do. I mean, people get so complicated about things.
I have to tell you, you know, we did a jam and jelly show a couple of weeks ago. I actually made that blueberry pepper jelly.
I know. I tasted it. It was absolutely delicious.
So, you know, that was pretty much cooking fruit down and, you know,
right,
with the peppers. So at what point could that have been used in a pie?
Well, you could have brought it all away and used it as a pie. But if you'd have stopped it before you cooked the berries away, and you could have cooked half of the berries just into the jam or the jelly, as you call it, and then take it off the fire and just stir in another whole batch of whole blueberries into it and use that as the filling in a pie. It would have been fantastic.
So you just kind of really stop delicious. It before you put the sure gel in there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I got you.
And it made a great pie, no doubt about it.
I do have a second book to recommend.
Okay.
It's called A Year of Pies.
A Year of Pies.
A Year of Pies, A Seasonal Tour of Home-Baked Pies. This was written by Ashley English. It's got beautiful photography, recipes like rosemary bourbon, sweet potato pie, caramelized onion and blue cheese galette. It seems that she kind of revolutionizes pie making. She even has a new twist for the traditional shoe fly pie. She's organized her recipes seasonally so that you can use fresh ingredients for your fillings. This book, A Year of Pies, was named one of Booklist's top 10 food books of 2012.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Sweet and savory pie for lovers of both.
Well, no, that's great. Two great pie books. What about on our written pages? Do we keep on our facts and figures page? What do we call that?
Guests and goodies. Yeah, it's there.
And guests and goodies, we have every recipe and all that all the way through, right? So you can go back and...
And that's archived pretty well as well.
That goes way back, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That goes way back. All right, y'all, rather than do a whole pie, I'm going to give you the secret to a fabulous pie crust. Because everybody seems to think that that's the hardest part. Well, I'm going to give you a pie crust that is so incredibly, incredibly, incredibly great. It's so easy to do. And I'm using a food processor.
Okay.
You know, you heard Aaron say food processor is really good. So in the food processor, I'm going to put 2.5 cups of flour. Now, this is for a sweet pie, so I'm going to add to that 2.5 cups of flour, I'm going to add 1 tablespoon of sugar and a pinch of salt. You always want to put a little salt to balance that sweet. So you have your 2.5 cups of flour. Now you're going to spin that around once or twice just to mix it together. And then I'm going to add to that, you ready for this, Michelle?
Mm-hmm.
1/4 pound of cold unsalted butter cut into 1/2-inch pieces.
Okay.
Now, to that, you're going to add 1/4 cup of cold vegetable shortening. And I'm going to say like Crisco or one of those. If you have lard, that's okay too. That lard. But anyway, you're going to have 1/4 pound of cold unsalted butter cut into 1/2-inch pieces and 1/4 cup of cold vegetable shortening cut into 1/2-inch pieces. Now, if you want to use all butter, you can just use 1/2 pound of unsalted butter. And basically, you're using 1/4 pound for every cup and 1/4 of flour. So for 1/4 cups of flour, you're using that 1/4 pound of butter. So since we're making a top and a bottom crust, we're doing 2.5 cups of flour. So now we have to use 1/4 pound of cold butter and 1/4 pound of cold vegetable shortening, which I love to combine. And then I cut them in little pieces. So the first thing I'm going to do is after my flour, sugar, and salt is in the food processor, I'm going to pulse it around. Then I'm going to throw in the cold unsalted butter and the cold shortening, and I'm going to pulse that until, just a couple of minutes, until it looks like cornmeal. Now, the secret to a good pie crust is that you want to, as you heard Aaron say, you want to keep the shortening flaky in the flour. That way, when it cooks in the pie crust, it steams and blows the crust into what we call flakes or flaky pie crust. When you use your hands the way my mayor used to do it, the 98.6 degrees temperature of the hands would melt the butter. Plus, a lot of times they didn't have good refrigeration, so the butter was churned fresh, and you had to keep it in cold water. So it was never quite cold enough to make a great flaky crust.
Yeah.
So it was a lot harder work back then. But today with our refrigerators, and today keeping the Cuisinart handy, you don't have to touch the butter with your hot hands, and you just pulse it until it looks like cornmeal, and then you're ready to go. I'm going to say you should have a little less than 1/2 cup of ice cold water. I take about 1/4 cup of water and I add ice cubes to it and I let it melt so it's ice cold. And then with the pulse running on the machine once the cornmeal type flour is done with the shortening. I go ahead and drizzle in that quarter cup of ice cold water until it starts to make a ball around the side of the machine, and you stop it immediately. You do not want to overwork it. Mm-hmm. Take it out of the Cuisinart, cut it in half, wrap it in clear wrap, put it in the refrigerator, and then when I'm ready to make the pie, I roll each disc out into a 9-inch piece, and it's done. Y'all, recipe on the website, and I just gave you the secret to a good pie, which is a great pie crust. See you next time. Go make a pie.